Good day, Trinidad and Tobago, the Caribbean and the world. Welcome to this week's episode of Strictly Legal on WESN Content Capital. I am your host, Rondell Donovan. Once again, I'm excited. I'm grateful to be alive. I'm grateful to bring the law and you. Today, we have a very special episode. I'm dealing with the roles and functions of the Ombudsman of Trinidad and Tobago. Many of you, throughout your lifespan, have heard the name, the word, the personnel, the Ombudsman, but you don't know what is the function of the Ombudsman. Is he relevant? Is the office relevant? What do they do? Do they have jurisdiction over matters of public or private entities? But of course, we have our special guest. We have the Ombudsman here with us today, and we are grateful to have Mr. Rajman Lal Joseph, who is the fifth Ombudsman of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. And just a little bit about him. He was administered the oath of office by the Honorable Bridget Mary Anicet George MP, as well as he would have been appointed by Her Excellency Paula May Weeks on June 9th, 2021, before assuming duties. Mr. Joseph succeeded Mr. Patrick Mark Wellington, who served as Ombudsman from 2018 to 2021. Mr. Joseph is an established attorney at law with almost 3 decades experience in both public and private law. And from 1985 to 2004, he served as a part-time lecturer and tutor in a number of academic courses at the St. Augustine and Cavill campuses of the University of the West Indies. Of course, in 1992, he served as a partner in the law firm of Passard, Mirage, Joseph and Company. He was appointed as the chairman of the Standing Disciplinary Tribunal of the Police Service Commission, Teaching Service Commission, and the Public Service Commission from 2006 to 2009. And in February 2009, he was appointed the President of the Republic, by the President of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago, on the advice of the Judicial and Legal Service Commissioner, as the judge and chairman of the Equal Opportunity Commission of Trinidad and Tobago. And he served there for 8 years and he retired in September 2017. Now, Mr. Joseph had a long, illustrious career in law, and he is now appointed the Ombudsman of Trinidad and Tobago since 2021. I know it's a lot. However, it's important that we know the quality and the academic qualification and experience of this Ombudsman of Trinidad and Tobago. So let me bring him on set. Mr. Joseph, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
And how are you?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm good. And thank you for joining this set where many, many greats have sat. And of course, I know the citizens are very excited to hear exactly what is your role and function. So let's start with you as, mm-hmm. as the Ombudsman. What is the Ombudsman? Okay. Or who is the Ombudsman?
The office, let's deal with the office. The office is a creature of the Constitution. And the Constitution creates this office and endows the office with certain authority. Okay? And you would find that sections 91 to 98 would deal with the appointment of the Ombudsman, and he is appointed in the same way as certain significant public functionaries by the President, acting on the advice of the whoever gives advice to the President, but the President is required to consult with the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition. Okay? But you know, Mr. Donovan, the court would not inquire into the nature of that consultation, okay? So that it is really a decision that is taken by the President, okay? I don't know of any instance where the President indicated that this is the person that he or she would like to have occupied his office, and either the Prime Minister or the Leader of the Opposition would say no. Okay.
And of course, the Ombudsman, the office of the Ombudsman is an independent institution.
Oh, yes, it is. Unlike many other significant public offices, the Ombudsman is immune from the normal passions of politics that play in the society. Okay. He's considered to be an officer of Parliament. Okay. And that is why our reports go to Parliament. Okay. We lay our reports every year with the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and then the Parliament has an opportunity to scrutinize our report, debate it, and so on. And then we have the authority under the Constitution to lay before Parliament, apart from our annual reports, special reports. That comes about when a particular complaint may not have been resolved, but it is significant.
And when we say a particular complaint, and that is where I was going to in terms of what can you do? I mean, what can the office do, but in terms of what can the ombudsman do?
All right.
What do you investigate?
First of all, the ombudsman is charged with the responsibility of investigating complaints that deal with public maladministration. If you went to a public entity for a service, for instance, and you are displeased with the service because there's excessive delay, because you are not getting the service that you, as a member of the public, is entitled to, you could make a complaint to the ombudsman. Okay? Complaints could be made by letter, by email, and we have a Dropbox at our offices. You can write your complaint and drop it in there. We clear it every day, and it goes to the investigators, and eventually it comes to me.
So in terms of complaints, what type of complaints are we speaking about?
First of all, any type of complaint that you may have against a public authority, number one, or an entity that is engaged in providing public functions. All right, for instance, you may have an entity that is incorporated under the Companies Act or the previous legislation, the Companies Ordinance, and continued under the Companies Act. And it performs certain public functions, and therefore we would have jurisdiction. A good example might be the Port Authority. Okay? The Port Authority is not necessarily classified as a public authority. However, because they perform certain public functions, okay, and you could classify those functions as governmental functions, then that would give us the jurisdiction to take up complaints against them.
So therefore, it draws to the fact that you can investigate ministries,
yes,
as well as state enterprises,
yes,
as well as authorities that may be solely or partly owned by the government?
It has to be a situation where the revenue of the entity is provided by the state. Once you get most of your revenue from the state, that triggers the jurisdiction of the ombudsman.
Indeed. And, okay, so you have a complaint, but what is the difference between going to the office of the ombudsman versus going to the attorney at law for advice on such complaints?
The Constitution says that we cannot charge anything for our services.
Indeed. So this is basically a free service for persons who cannot afford legal advice.
Actually, Mr. Donawa, I recently did a sort of a guesstimate on what it costs taxpayers when we process a complaint from the beginning through someone's hearing, okay, and laying a special report to Parliament. And my guesstimate is that costs the taxpayers between $40,000 to $50,000.
Just for the investigation, just for the entire
yeah, the whole process, yeah.
But it almost, I mean, and that is the sum, basically, what an attorney may charge if you have
yes.
to go through the whole process.
Yes.
But the difference is that the attorney, that's if, for instance, someone is aggrieved, someone feels as though a public authority has done them wrong, and they would like to go through a judicial review function. Mm-hmm. What is the difference in terms of the judicial review aspect of the law versus the investigation by the ombudsman?
Okay, first of all, you have to get leave of the court before you have a substantive application for review, okay? You go to an attorney, you have to pay for that application for leave. You may or may not get leave, Okay. If you don't get it, but your attorney feels that the court may not have taken into account certain material considerations, you could appeal. And then that's another fee you pay. But let's assume that you get leave and you get into the substantive matter, okay? You are going to have to pay your attorney a substantial sum of money, all right, to engage in the trial process before you get a decision. Now, if you come to the ombudsman, you don't pay a cent, number one. Number two, we may possibly resolve your matter very early. And if it is not resolved by our process, our initial process, which is writing to the authority, I have the power under the Constitution to issue a summons to the head of the authority to appear before me and answer questions under oath, Mr. Donahoe.
And under oath is important. And I know this particular instance, in this case that I'm going to ask you about is sub judice mean, and it's before the court. But I just want for you to provide a little overview as to how we got to this position whereby there was an article in the newspaper in August which states that the ombudsman files criminal complaint against a regional corporation CEO. And it basically stated that you would have initiated summary criminal proceedings against a chief executive officer of a particular corporation after she failed to appear mm-hmm. with respect to a summons. Mm-hmm. And in terms of your role, you can take legal action against public officers.
The thing about it is this. Once I issue a summons to any public functionary to appear before me, and you don't, under Section 10 of the Ombudsman Act, I could initiate summary proceedings against you, okay? But all you have to do, if you can't appear, is to call my office and say, look, I have an engagement. I have to attend a council meeting on that particular morning. Could you adjourn it? And we'll facilitate it. But if you don't communicate at all, I am not going to take a very conciliatory view, okay?
And go ahead, sorry.
Because it is a summons, and the summons is the same type of summons that you get from the High Court. Under Section 97 of the Constitution, when a summons is issued by the Ombudsman and the hearing of the summons is analogous to High Court proceedings, okay?
So therefore that, you're saying if someone fails to appear before you, you have penal powers?
Yes, yes. And what I would do is I would lay a complaint against you, okay?
So let's start with the, I understand, okay, someone is, a citizen is making a complaint mm-hmm. against any public authority or statutory authority with respect, let's say, for instance, they wanted their drain repaired and the corporation failed to adhere or to actually investigate their complaint. Mm-hmm. Can someone go to the ombudsman
yes.
for that situation?
We deal with that as a matter of course. We have quite a number of complaints against regional bodies like municipal corporations. And the example you just draw to us there, box drains, it's a classic one. Almost all the complaints that we get has to do with that because once you don't have proper drainage, you're going to have flooding. Flooding brings misery to the average resident. Good. And it is the responsibility of the regional corporations to deal with it.
And let's say, for instance, they have not, I mean, let's go through in terms of your inquiry, your investigative mm-hmm. stage. Someone comes, I come to your office to lay a complaint stating that, okay, my corporation failed to continuously clean the drains. Can you just take us through the step-by-step okay, phase good. In terms of how these complaints are investigated?
Once we get the complaint, we would write the first letter to the CEO of the corporation, okay, outlining the complaint and asking them to respond. Now, if they don't respond, they get a second letter, and that letter tells them, you have 21 days to respond, and if you don't, I would be constrained to exercise my jurisdiction pursuant to Section 97(1) of the Constitution, which means that I'm going to issue a summons to you to appear.
And then you issue a summons for them to appear. And if they do appear, what is the status of the approach? Yes.
Okay. The approach is that I would ask pertinent questions dealing with why it is that this complaint has not been addressed. Okay? What difficulties are you having, if any at all, in dealing with this complaint? And generally, I would be told, and I'm not going to call names, that the problem is funding.
Usual.
No, that is almost standard. Okay. I have been told by certain CEOs that the area of their jurisdiction exceed Tobago in size, exceed Barbados in size, and yet they don't get any kind of funding. Okay? No, I'm being told
indeed,
that.
Indeed. So therefore, what empowers you to ensure that
generally, I would ask the CEO or the engineer to give me an undertaking, all right, to deal with this problem within a particular time frame, okay? And when you are finished, write to me, letting me know the outcome. You follow me? And what I would normally do is I would ask one of my investigators to do a site visit to confirm that the undertaking is being operationalized.
And if the undertaking was not adhered to, what are your functions?
Then I would send a notice of a further hearing. Because when I adjourn the summons for you to operationalize your undertaking, I will tell you that the summons is adjourned to a date to be fixed. Okay? And if I get information from my investigator, who would have done a site visit, that the project is not completed, then the engineer or the CEO is going to get a notice of further hearing.
And all these notices of further hearing, what about the authority or the power to make orders as such as how the High Court will make particular orders to compel you? And failure to comply, then proceedings will be held against you, fines or other plenary powers.
I have the power under the Constitution to make recommendations. I, in the hearing of a summons, could request undertakings, okay? However, I am prohibited from making orders analogous to that of a High Court judge, okay? It is because the framers of our Constitution did not want to encroach upon the power of the High Court. You always have to be careful. You know the decision of the Privy Council in Hines, all right?
Yeah.
Good. So that sends a message clearly to anyone who is dealing with constitutional authority that you cannot willy-nilly trespass upon the powers of the High Court, or the Supreme Court, as we call it.
Therefore, one may ask, okay, well, therefore, if the ombudsman cannot impress on certain orders or have powers to fine or to jail or whatever it is, then why should I come to the ombudsman to resolve an issue?
Okay, because generally, public sector organizations would heed the recommendations of the ombudsman, because they know if they don't, I am going to lay a special report in Parliament, okay? And then Parliament could discuss it, and they can take further action. And I don't think any CEO, any permanent secretary, any head of department, any director of human resources want to go that way.
Indeed, because that is a permanent record.
Exactly.
On one, your performance, and on your character.
Mm-hmm. And remember, too, I have the power to write to the various commissions, all right, about the breach of the undertaking. And that may constitute misconduct.
And is it that you also have the power to request or to file an action before the court
for breach? Yes, I can do that. Okay.
And in that way, and in that way, request through your reliefs to ask the court to grant sitting orders.
Yes, we can do it, but we would be very hesitant to do that.
Okay.
Because, okay, you are dealing with public authorities.
Indeed.
Public authorities, especially the public officers, they are under the jurisdiction of the various commissions. Okay, if it is a police person, the Police Service Commission. If it is a normal public officer, the Public Service Commission. If it's a teaching functionary, you have the Teaching Service Commission, and they exercise disciplinary control over these functionaries. And I have the ability and the authority under the Constitution to activate that.
Indeed. So therefore, you are sort of like a conduit,
yes,
or a middleman to ensure that these authorities comply.
That's right.
And then you can make recommendations to other disciplinary or authorities that are guided by those particular agencies to go further, to
yes,
act.
Yes, and public officers are fully aware of it.
And I mean, we touch on the fact that we have citizens making complaints against authorities. What about employees of these statutory or governmental bodies? Can an employee who has been, or who feels as though they are treated unfairly via whether it is they would have been bypassed for promotion or anything like that, discrimination, can they lay a complaint to the Office of the Ombudsman?
Okay, what I can tell you, Mr. Donohue, is this. We handle a lot of complaints from employees of different ministries, okay? And the complaints are normally the non-payment of increments, acting allowances. These bread and butter issues we deal with on a daily basis, okay? And interestingly, we are able to really resolve these matters fairly expeditiously now. Because what I have done is I have shortened the process by which we seek to get relief from public authorities. So you get one letter. If you don't respond in a positive way to that letter, you get what I call a final letter. Thereafter, you're going to get a summons to appear before me.
And who wants that on their record?
Exactly.
At the end of the day.
Exactly.
And of course, can if the an individual, a citizen who doesn't have a direct interest in a situation, sees something that is going on, can they make a complaint on behalf of someone else?
Yes, they could. We have many instances where people, they may or may not be affected, but somebody close to them is affected. And they have made complaints to us. The complaint is made on behalf of the individual or community, and we deal with it.
And for instance, also, I mean, I know on your website there it states that your office provides counseling as well as referrals on subject matters that are outside of your jurisdiction. Can you just explain on that?
Sometimes a person may make a complaint to the ombudsman, but we really don't have jurisdiction. What we do have is the ability to, for instance, write to the relevant public agency that could deal with it and ask them to look into it. A classic example is someone sees construction taking place in some area that they feel should not happen. We have no jurisdiction over that. The land is privately owned. However, the Town and Country Planning Division has jurisdiction.
Indeed, yes.
The Environmental Management Authority may have jurisdiction. So we could easily write to the director of the Town and Country Planning Division to inquire as to whether planning permission has been granted. And if not, use your enforcement powers under the law, you see?
Because there's a way to get around the situation of
yes.
a private
yes.
issue. Because public bodies form part, and public bodies has to give the approvals.
Yeah.
And if approvals are not given, yeah. then that yeah. is where the functions comes in.
Yes.
That is indeed interesting. I know there was a question from someone with respect to private companies. Can the ombudsman investigate private companies
no.
and complaints?
As a general rule, no. However, if the private company receives most of its revenue from the state, yes. That makes it amenable to the jurisdiction of the ombudsman.
And do you have an example of what private companies that may receive funds from the state? Yes.
Let's take FCB. FCB is a company incorporated under the Companies Ordinance initially and continued under the Companies Act. But it is majority owned by the state. Okay? And if it is that someone is dissatisfied with a particular service of the by the FCB, and they ask us to look into it. And I am of the view that the matter should be dealt with by my office, I will take that matter up. However, if it is a routine banking matter, like you're dissatisfied with the quantum of fee they charge you, I would refer you to the Financial Services Ombudsman.
And that was the question I was going to ask, the difference between those two, because I know a question was asked whether if you have an issue with an insurance company, can you go to the ombudsman to lay a complaint?
Generally, I would suggest you go to the Financial Services Ombudsman. And they too would send matters to me if they don't have jurisdiction. Okay, so we have a fairly decent working relationship.
So are you saying that they have jurisdiction over
insurance companies and banks, generally?
Generally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, that's a way that persons can find some sort of relief.
Apart from that, too, the people at the Financial Services Ombudsman, they have specialized knowledge about banking and insurance, okay? So that they can give the citizen better service. But if it is that with this particular bank, you have a difficulty and it cannot be resolved by the Financial Services Ombudsman, you're free to make a complaint to us.
Indeed, and you can investigate, direct, as well as summon the authority or whomever that needs to be summoned in order to deal with the issue. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the Ombudsman Office is about rectifying the issue or resolving the issue rather than having to go to litigation, yeah. To court. Can you just tell us where the Ombudsman's office are?
Okay, we have three offices. Our head office is at the International Waterfront Center. It's Tower D, and it's at the 12th floor, okay? It is accessible easily, and you can come and you could drop a complaint in our complaint box at the ground floor. You can make an appointment to see an investigator, and you could even make an appointment to see me.
So a citizen can see you directly?
Yes.
And the other locations?
We have our San Fernando office, and then we have our Tobago office at Bacolet Street. So I think the country as a whole is well serviced.
And of course, they could email you, because I'm seeing that there's an email address, feedback@ombudsman.gov.tt,
yes.
As well as they can contact, the head office, I'm seeing the numbers here, in Port of Spain, 624-3121, San Fernando, 652-6786, and Tobago, 639-1302.
That's correct.
And of course, your website is ombudsman.gov.tt. And everything is really there.
Yeah, everything is
in
there.
Terms of how can you access the services which are free, which are paid by the taxpayers.
Yes, it is.
And it's important to understand that the ombudsman is an important role, function, the office in Trinidad and Tobago.
It is. And I cannot say that it is underutilized. It is now being utilized significantly more than in previous years. Actually, for this year, I have issued and heard 129 summons.
That's a lot.
Yes.
That's a lot.
Okay, so that we are trying to deal with complaints expeditiously. Because...
what's the timeline for completion of complaints?
We try to deal with complaints between 3 months to maximum of a year. I don't want complaints to go beyond that. Okay. There were complaints that they were difficult to deal with, and it took a few years to have them resolved. One unfortunate complaint that I dealt with, and I dealt with it within 3 months, Mr. Donovan. Unfortunately, the beneficiary passed away before the quantum of compensation agreed upon by the Solicitor General and the EBC could have been paid.
But of course, the estate can.
Yes,
can
the estate paid. Could. All right, but we communicated with the lady's husband as to what to do.
Indeed, Mr. Joseph, I'm sorry, but we are out of time on this program. And of course, if so be it, and you decide that you want to come back again, we will be more delighted to have you in terms of touching on specific cases.
For instance, we have not dealt with the role of the Ombudsman under the Freedom of Information Act.
And I think that is very important to note.
And we have not touched on the role of the Ombudsman under the Tobago House of Assembly Act.
So, guys, sorry, we definitely need to have Mr. Joseph back on this program. Thank you so much, Mr. Joseph.
You're welcome.
And of course, this is a wrap. You have been watching Strictly Legal on WESN Content Capital. I am your host, Rhonda Donwa. Do have a blessed day. Goodbye. We'll be right back.